Welcome to IPI's Global Observatory. Today we are speaking to Ambassador Liberata Mulamula, a senior diplomatic advisor to the President of the Republic of Tanzania, who was until December 2011 the Executive Secretary of the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region. Ambassador Mulamula, having served as the Executive Secretary of the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region for 5 years, what are your thoughts on the state of peace and security in the region? What progress has been achieved so far? And what remains to be done for sustainable peace in the Great Lakes, for example, in the Democratic Republic of Congo?
First of all, thank you for this opportunity. I've really always admired the work that the International Peace Institute is doing, and I've been privileged to be associated with your seminars and to meet the great minds. I was, yes, the first executive secretary of the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region. The name is long, but it means a lot. This was an intergovernmental organization that was put in place specifically to deal with the unique problems of that region. You know, it is a region that had long history of violence. It was a theater of genocide in Rwanda, the civil war in DRC, which had as termed as the another Third World War because it involved many, many countries. So I was given the task to ensure that we change the image. We change the image of the region. We transform the region from the conflict ridden to the hub of peace. And this came out of the commitment of the leaders who signed what we used to call a regional pact on peace, stability and development in the region. This was 2006. And following the signing is when I was appointed to put up this institutional mechanism to provide a political platform to be able to allow the countries of the region to talk to each other, to dialogue, but also not to limit it to the government, but to involve all sectors of the society, the women, the youth, the civil society. So I must say, by the time I assumed the office, the region was still in turbulence. Burundi was still at war with the rebel group. The Eastern DRC, of course, again, as we are talking, there's been a lapse. But by the time I left, after my 5 year period of duty, I left the region much better. I must also say that by the time I left, the guns were silent. The region was relatively peaceful, was calm. It was also the time that all countries, almost all countries of the region, had held their elections. And you know, in our countries, the election time is making or break it. Whether the elections in all these countries were free or fair, but at least they were peaceful. I saw an end to the unconstitutional change of government. All countries went through this electoral process, the democratic processes. Of course, as I say, I left when the region was quiet. Compared to what was happening in the north of the continent, I was happy that I left the region in that better state. But of course, the challenges remain. The major challenge is the continued presence of the armed groups. You know, in Eastern DRC, it's like a home of the rebel groups. The rebel groups that fled from, of course, Rwanda, you have RRA littering the region, moving from one country to the other. You have a problem of this morning we are speaking about the unfinished agenda, the DDR. We have done more on the disarmament, the mobilization, but the reintegration to have the strong armies, national armies in the Congo to be able to assume the responsibility to protect its citizens. You have a big army that is made up of the former militia, the armed groups, of course, and the so-called national army that went through the transition, but these were not fully integrated. And this is why you have the mutineers now. You have the Boss Contaganda factor. So these are still the challenges. But as long as we pay lip service to building the capacity of these fragile states to to have their own strong institutions, be the institutions of government, judiciary, the armed forces, I think will be failing. We'll be failing our people. Because I thought that we have gone through a very difficult time and that what we had achieved will not be reversed. But now I'm getting a bit jittery that it might be reversed if especially the United Nations does not pay attention to that region.
You mentioned North Africa. North Africa and the Middle East have seen dramatic political changes and are going through challenging transitions. Do you expect similar uprisings to occur in sub-Saharan Africa? How can the existing social democracy and governance deficits in many African countries be improved in order to prevent further instability?
Of course, the situations are different. You know, the regimes in the North Africa, they were quite different from the regimes in south of the Sahara in our region, but there are similarities of the situations. I'm not praying that what happened in those countries, whether you call Arab Spring or you call them the revolutions, that it will happen. I think we have overcome that. But with the similarities, and if you go to the causes, the problem of the youth. In fact, this is a challenge. This is when I left, I was concerned that nothing much has been done about the youth unemployment, the youth are on the streets. And when we talk even of the militia, the armed groups, you find mostly these people, they mobilize the child soldiers, they mobilize the youth who are just loitering around. So if we not take this problem seriously, we might also find ourselves maybe in a similar situation. I remember during the last summit, before I left the organization, when I was ending my mandate in Kampala in December, the youth, I always used to give them the opportunity to address the summit themselves, to speak themselves. They challenged their leaders, the heads of state, that we hear you talking all these nice-sounding statements, but where do we fit in this? How do you the youth participate in this, in determining the future and the destiny of our countries? What are you doing about the employment of the youth, the unemployment? So then they challenged the leaders, and the leaders decided that the next summit, it will just be about the youth unemployment. So if they do really seriously address this, of course, it all starts at the national level. There's much you can do at the regional level, but if it's not translated in actual jobs, in actual participation of the youth in determining the future of their countries, then I'm afraid we have a time bomb. So this is where I fear most. I know in terms of constitutions, we have very good constitutions. We have, as I said, we have had democratic elections, unlike maybe what was happening in the north or in the monarchies. But then, is that all? There is a lot to be done in terms of upholding the principles of the rule of law, of the good governance, and all those values, good values. So I would want to see a repeat of the spring, because ours might not be a spring, might be a winter. So let's avoid that.
You are from Tanzania, and Tanzania is recognized as a stable and peaceful democracy. What lessons could your country share with its neighbors in the region that are still lagging behind in terms of democracy and good governance? How do you view the contribution of Tanzania to African politics in general and to diplomacy and conflict resolution more specifically?
Yeah, what we see Tanzania of today, it didn't just happen. Of course, one we have to thank our forefathers, the leaders. We had Mwalimu Nyerere, if you remember the Mwalimu Nyerere, our first president. He invested so much in the unity of the country. He invested so much in the peace of our country, but he invested so much in the liberation of Africa. We sacrificed a lot so as to ensure that Africa, our neighboring countries, are free, invested in the liberation movements. So for us, it is a country that has diversities. It is a country that has more than 120 tribes who cannot communicate. But because of the good policies of Mwalim, he took it that we cannot continue as different entities. We have to be unified, and he did this by introducing, for example, one language, the Kiswahili language. But he was also a president, and those who took over from him, who respected so much about the rule of law, about the equality of its citizens. There was nobody who was left out, either in terms of education or in governance or in whatever privileges. So there was all-inclusive kind of government. And this is what has made Tanzania to be what it is. Because, you know, the policies of other countries, the policies of exclusion, of marginalization, of playing the card of ethnicity, it was never played. And this is what Tanzania has been trying to impart to others. You know, Tanzania has been involved in many peacemaking, in many peace negotiations. We facilitated a lot of conflict resolutions, of peace agreements. So we thought, in our modest way, we have something we could share with others. In fact, when I was also given this opportunity to start up the Secretariat of the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region, it was not that Tanzania put me as a candidate. It was other countries that they say, why do we look around? We have a Tanzanian lady here who can bring what we are seeking to the region, the good practices. So this is what Tanzania has been trying to share with others. Sometimes we are overstretched. We get involved into so many conflicts, from Madagascar to Comoros to Somalia to you name it. Even 2 days ago, my president was receiving the President Ouattara of Cote d'Ivoire in Tanzania. And the President Ouattara, the first thing he said, you know, Tanzania are very modest. I want to start by thanking you, Mr. President. You were part of the panel that led to the final solution in Cote d'Ivoire. And then my president was saying, oh, merci beaucoup. So you can see that this is what Tanzania is all about. But what I'm saying is it didn't just happen. We invested, our leaders invested, our people really, if you come to Tanzania, maybe by our nature, we are told we are not aggressive, but then I think that is what has come of identity of Tanzania, peaceful people.
You mentioned President Ouattara from Cote d'Ivoire, and we see that West Africa is dealing with its challenges resulting from unconstitutional changes of government, but also growing transnational organized crime. How could regional peace and security be strengthened to overcome threats that can no longer be handled by individual countries? And what more is needed to build strong continental and sub-regional peace and security architectures?
Yeah, I think for Africa, when people talk of Africa, they talk of Africa as one. But we are just small countries, some of the countries that you cannot even qualify to be a country. So where our answer lies in integration. Integrating some of the fragile countries, but integrating our small economies, integrating the solutions. What I see, for example, the Great Lakes region, we have some who are big. Congo in size is very big, but it's also very fragile. It cannot stand alone. Burundi. So these are the countries where they cannot survive on their own. So the answer, I think, is in the integration. If we can succeed to have all these countries integrated, there was a time when we thought we were on a movement to have a United States of Africa. They remember what happened, but then I think that is still the goal. We have the regional economic communities that are the building blocks. We have these sub-regional organizations. Like the International Conference on the Great Lakes Region came in not because of we wanted to multiply the regional sub-regional organizations. It came in with a specific agenda for peace and security to create a conducive environment so that the regional economic communities can be able to achieve their economic agenda. And as you know, without economic development, there will be no peace, and vice versa. So for me, I see the future and hope for Africa in full integrated Africa.
Despite the events in Rwanda and Darfur, the politicization of ethnicity remains a serious cause of conflict in Africa. Considering the efforts made by the African Union and the United Nations with principles such as the responsibility to protect and the protection of civilians, would you say Africa is better equipped to prevent genocides from occurring again?
I can say yes and no. Yes, because there is a commitment after the Rwanda genocide that never, never again. There is that political commitment. But it is no, because what we saw in Kenya, post-election violence, some of it was termed as another genocide. What we see in Darfur. So we cannot sit and be complacent that we have overcome. What we need, of course, to see, first of all, this ethnic card. Ethnic card has been always used by the politicians for their selfish ends, political ends. Let's see ethnicism as an opportunity, but as our strength. Like as I said in Tanzania, we have used it as our strength, not as a weakness. But we know the reality is that we are still divided along tribal lines, along ethnic lines. And in Kenya now, as they are approaching the elections, you can see that card being used by the politicians. But I hope they will be able to learn from the past, the lessons of the 2008. I hope there will be no repeat. But I'm saying, in short, that we cannot be complacent and say that we'll never see genocide. As long as we continue to have this political rhetoric, we continue to have these politicians who use ethnicism for their selfish ends, and as long as we don't have strong institutions to withstand these individual politicians. If you have strong institutions of governance, you have strong parliaments, you have strong judiciary, you have a strong judicial system, you have strong leadership, like what we see in Rwanda. Rwanda, after 16 years of genocide, you go to Rwanda, you can't imagine that there was genocide in Rwanda, that is, they have built it from the ashes. It's because of strong leadership. There is no alternative to strong leadership. You might call it any name, whether it's autocratic one, but we need a strong leadership. So as long as we don't invest in strong institutions, in strong leadership, then, of course, I cannot say that we can ever see genocide in our continent.
Finally, President Joyce Banda of Malawi has warned Sudanese President al-Bashir he will be arrested should he attempt to participate in the coming AU summit in Lilongwe. With another African woman to be sworn in this month as the prosecutor of the International Criminal Court, are you positive about a stronger collaboration of African leaders with the ICC?
I don't know whether to have an African prosecutor that maybe would make a difference in terms of the fundamental issues that have been raised and the fundamental problem we have had with the ICC. I made a visit to the ICC in January in The Hague. We had a meeting in The Hague. I went specifically with the Kenyans and others to visit and see ICC. We were all shocked, first of all, that the budget of ICC is almost more than 800 million just to prosecute six indictees who are all from Africa. So really, it bothers everybody. You say, I mean, this was meant for Africa, but that is one. But two, I find ICC, the positive part of ICC, it is kind of a deterrent. A deterrent to see that if you don't want to see yourself in The Hague, better behave. Better respect for, and deal it with the problems within your own countries. Because the fact that we are going to ICC is because of the non-performance and the failure of our judicial systems. I remember in Kenya, they were given a choice to establish their own tribunal, to try their people, but then they could not even agree on what kind of institution. So they found themselves now in the ICC. So this is why I'm saying ICC, of course, is not there to substitute, to replace our own institutions. If at all this $800 million would be invested in our judicial systems, wouldn't have to be in the ICC. But as long as our judicial systems are not that strong, are not well structured to deal with this kind of problems, then ICC will always be fishing us out. But I don't think that with the change of the prosecutor would be the end, maybe, of the problems, these ones have to be adequately and fundamentally addressed. They are, I'm saying it is, I mean, whoever, if you go to ICC or you go on their feet, it's very difficult to convince anybody that this ICC is not targeting only African, African people. So if that is still the case, even with the new African prosecutor, then you see our relationship with the ICC will not be that rosy.
Thank you very much, Ambassador Mulamula. It was a pleasure speaking to you on the IPIS Global Observatory.
Thank you. I want to thank you again for the opportunity and to congratulate you for the good job you are doing as IPI. Okay.